a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's top local story, special coverage with Dave and Dujanovic.
What we've uncovered today about the suspect who police say shot two Sauley County deputy sheriffs in the face on Saturday, right outside the Salt Lake County Jail and Sheriff's Office building in South Salt Lake. It is just shocking. Dave, his rap sheet is at least 12 years long, from what I found. Drugs on that rap sheet. I mean, so many drug charges on that rap sheet. We could spend all day talking about just the drug charges. Accused of selling drugs to an undercover officer a few years ago. Cocaine here in Salt Lake City. Vehicle burglaries in Tooele and beyond. He's got failures to complete a drug treatment program or treatment program. And then comes this shooting on Saturday where we've kind of backtracked what, you know, the initial charges were. It looks like charges stemming 3 years ago. He's still in the system for that, going to court, not showing up for court, warrants issued for his arrest. And he walks away at some point, we believe in February, from a treatment center in Salt Lake City. And then it's seen by these two deputies outside the jail, of all places, on Saturday. I'm sure they had no clue who he was when they approached him. And then gunfire.
And what's miraculous is that both these deputies survived, despite being shot in the face. One shot in the cheek, the other shot in the eye. That deputy lost his eye, but both survived. And quite frankly, a complete and total miracle. Well, in a few minutes, we're going to talk to Odyssey House, where the suspect was supposed to be receiving treatment. I believe he walked away, and we're not going to speak specifically to this case. They said they're not comfortable talking about this case for many reasons, and we will respect that. But we do want to know, generally speaking, what role that these halfway houses play in the criminal justice system.
If you miss the 9 o'clock hour, Sheriff Rosie Rivera called in at 9:20. We wanted an update on those two deputies. They're recovering. It's going to be a long road. One of them lost his eye. And then we asked Sheriff Rosie, does she know where the suspect got a hold of a gun? Because based on this rap sheet, I could throw this down on the table. I don't know if you can hear this or not. This rap sheet, Dave, how big is this? How thick is this?
It's like half a ream of paper.
And this is part of what I was able to print out. I mean, I just couldn't print enough of the rap sheet today to bring it all in the studio with me. So we asked her, where in the world did he get the gun? Where did he get the gun?
Typically in some of these types of cases, they're stolen guns. I'm sure the protocol team will confirm where the gun came from and whether or not it was stolen. An individual with that kind of criminal history could not buy a gun legally. So, you know, one thing I'd like to tell our community, if you own guns, lock them up, because these guys will go out and they will steal your guns. You know, they're struggling drug addiction and they'll do anything to get that drug.
Yeah, we'll figure out as the investigation unfolds where he got the gun. And we had Brent Jacks, the president of the Fraternal Order of Police, the state's largest police union. We asked him to call in because my concern is, how did somebody with this type of a rap sheet with charges in 2009 and 2012 and 2013 and 2015 and 2017, 2018, 2019, why in the world was he not behind bars?
How many more days like that are we going to go through as a society before we finally wake up and realize that there are certain people that cannot function out in society, no matter how much we want them to.
The system not only failed those two deputies who were shot in the face on Saturday, I believe the system broke down and failed the suspect. He's dead. That's not public safety at its finest. We have so many questions to get to. And it's been reported that the suspect in this case, Joshua Michael Johnson, walked away from Odyssey House. Now, we have agreed that we will not delve into the specifics of his case. But we want to bring on Christina Zido. Did I say that right, Christina?
It's Zido.
Zido, Chief Operating Officer of Odyssey House of Utah. How often do people in treatment walk away from a treatment center such as yours?
Well, to start, I want to make sure that or support the commitment not to speak of any specific cases due to federal privacy rules. I'm here to share information on folks leaving against clinical advice, which happens within Odyssey House. Our statistics are about 25% of individuals will walk away. But in the national context, you often see rates for long-term residential at about 60% of people walking away. And the other piece to keep in mind is that because addiction is a chronic disease, and because the chronicity of the disease oftentimes has relapses associated with it, individuals may try treatment on average of 7 times before they actually stay long enough to begin to engage in the meaningful work that needs to be done to establish recovery.
For those that have left the criminal justice system, are they allowed to just walk away? I thought they were mandated by the parole to serve out, you know, a portion or complete that certain treatment.
Mm-hmm. What is common within our agency and our sister agencies is that the treatment, residential treatment level of care, does not involve a locked door. So while the individual is able to physically leave the treatment space, there would be a reporting to adult probation and parole and other legal contacts, as we have established by releases of information, to notify them that the individual is left. The only spaces where you have a truly locked down situation is in a correctional facility or potentially in the state hospital. And so when you're looking at residential levels of care that are community-based levels of care, those facilities are not locked, and so someone could physically leave.
Christina Zeidow is the Chief Operating Officer of Odyssey House. She's calling in today after we got word that the suspect in the shooting of those two deputy sheriffs, who both survived, the suspect is dead, over the weekend, walked away from Odyssey House against advice, from what we understand. She's come on the show, said, you know, you cannot talk about specific cases, which we are honoring here. But there are so many questions that we have about this, Christine. And one of the questions I think a lot of people listening would have, and I've often had, is who's paying for this treatment when a suspect or somebody who's just been released from jail is told by a judge to go through treatment? Who pays? Is that a taxpayer's expense?
For many of the individuals who are engaged in the criminal justice system and also in need of medical care, many of those individuals have Medicaid coverage, which is an excellent benefit because the amount that goes into that paid benefit from local Utah tax dollars is relatively minimal. The majority of the benefit is paid by the federal government. But the targeted adult Medicaid benefit, which came about in 2017, I believe, is the benefit that most of those individuals would qualify for. And the great thing about that is that prior to that benefit being in place, there were a lot of people who could not get treatment services. So while there are about 25% of individuals who may walk away from treatment against clinical advice, you've got 75% of individuals who really need residential levels of care or outpatient levels of care actually getting the services that they need, as opposed to continuing to engage in the cycle of crime and trauma and theft and gun issues and those types of things that we've seen happen time and time again when individuals aren't getting the mental health and physical health treatment that they require for their disease.
Christina Zaito, thank you so much for joining us from Odyssey House of Utah. A shocking number of residents walk away from these halfway houses. She said nationally, I think she said about 60% will walk away. It's much lower, according to her, from Odyssey House, around 25%. But against the advice of that halfway house from the counselors, these individuals still have the freedom to leave if they want, because they are not locked in. They can actually leave.
It's not like a jail.
No.
It's not like a jail. And I appreciate her coming on and painting a picture for us, because I think getting a visual of what goes on inside the halfway house may help us understand why this suspect was out on the streets on Saturday. It still does not give us all the answers we need. Like, for example, why wasn't he serving more time behind bars? It's a story we're going to continue to follow throughout this next several days right here on the Dave and Dujanovic Show.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.